today, when I think about business opportunities, I just weigh the pros and cons quite clearly. I like to dive into the numbers. I like to understand the opportunity. I like to not get taken by a lot of hype that could be happening around a particular idea. And then with that, then I always, always trust my gut instinct because it has served me very, very, very well throughout my life.
Welcome to the Sisterhood Club podcast, where we talk all things business, Web3, and NFTs. We're on a mission to educate, elevate, and empower women into the world of Web3. So join us on this journey as we learn together from leading experts. And remember, this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. So please do your own research and enjoy today's episode. Welcome to the Sisterhood Podcast and episode number 2. Very excited today. We have an amazing guest and I'm going to stop talking right there because I know that Pam knows this wonderful woman very well. And Pam, I know you've written a beautiful introduction to today's guest, so I'm going to let you kick off today.
Thank you. I have. I'm very excited to have you here today, Rania.
Thank you.
Yeah, today, Rania's got such a great story to share with the world in terms of her life journey so far. So I'm going to give you a quick snapshot without giving too much away. Rania is a mother, wife, founder, successful entrepreneur many times over. She started her own pharmacy at the age of 24 and grew it into a very well-respected multi-million dollar business. She created one of the first ever online pharmacies, heading down an exciting path of e-com, tech and digital. That business was then successfully acquired by Pharmacy for Less, which took her into a huge role in that business to take that into the UK, the US and China markets, growing the business from zero to 60 million in 3 years. She is now the CEO and founder of Digital Smoothie, which I'm going to let her tell us all about. So I know you're all going to get so many takeaways from this today and finish up feeling really inspired. So Rania, let's kick into it.
Hi, Pam. Thank you. Wow. It sounds really impressive when you read it like that.
You are impressive. Tell us where it all started.
Ah, gee, okay. Well, I suppose my journey really started in Lebanon, where I was born, where I grew up, where I spent my first 11 years of my life, because that's definitely shaped my risk-taking attitude. I grew up in a war zone, unfortunately for me, and so those first 11 years were spent in survival mode and having experienced quite a bit of hardship. And so when the moment arrived and we flew into Sydney at the age of 11 and I landed in Australia, I just could not believe it. I looked around me. I could just see the beauty of this gorgeous country. And I could, the first thought in my mind was, gosh, tonight I'm just going to sleep and I'm not going to be woken up by the sounds of bullets or bombs. So that, I suppose, if I reflect back, was definitely formative for me because then I developed this attitude of, what's the worst thing that could happen? Mm. You know?
Yeah.
As a kid, I've been through so much that really risk taking for me, whether it's in business or just, you know, really dreaming big, was something that I just didn't scare me. And also, there was the whole thing of making my parents proud. You know, they've sacrificed so much, you know, the usual migrant story, sacrificed so much to come out to this country. And I just studied very hard. And next thing I knew, I was getting really top marks and was studying pharmacy. So once I finished my pharmacy degree at a young age, I was in my very early 20s, 21, I started working in a little medical center pharmacy in Bankstown in Sydney. And I think within that first few months, I was saying to the owner of the pharmacy, I want to buy a pharmacy. Had nothing, didn't have any money, was living in housing commission. We're very, very just a regular life. My parents were just, you know, making ends meet. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really know how I was going to make that happen, but I kept saying it. I kept just visualizing it, kept telling this woman I want to buy a pharmacy. And true to that, within 6 months of that, she came to me and she said, Rania, do you want to go into a partnership with me here in this pharmacy? And I said, well, what's the percentage split? Mm-hmm. And she said, well, 30% for you. I said, no, it needs to be 51. She laughed. She goes, oh, you couldn't afford it, Rania, and I'm not interested. But hang on, I think there's another opportunity. There is a medical center pharmacy that's going to open soon, or a medical center, and we need a pharmacy in there. Are you interested in doing that particular pharmacy? And I said, yes. And, you know, from that point there, really, it involved me just hustling. So I started going to all the banks, trying to find the money, because in the pharmacy world, you always have to buy an existing pharmacy and move it into a space. And so I found the local pharmacy that I could buy, needed the money, needed about $500,000, which I had $5,000to contribute towards. And I started just knocking on the doors of all the banks, and I was turned down over and over again until I got lucky and found me a bank manager who listened, heard my story. You know, it was a really good business plan or business idea. And he said, Rania, I want you to go home and write a business plan and come back and show me. And, you know, I was before the age of Google. There was no Googling what a business plan is. I had no idea what a business plan looked like. So I went home and I just literally wrote down on a piece of paper like a little mini P&L that I could, you know, had some numbers and a net profit at the end of it, and went back to him, and he's just had a laugh and said, I think I can help you. Here's the loan over 3 years, and, you know, go for it. And so to me, that was definitely, it opened all the doors after that for me from that moment. So that's part of my story.
Wow. Oh, my God, there's just so many amazing things in that. But I guess the first thing that stood out for me was that your appetite for risk. And I think that this is what holds so many people back, is that, you know, they jump straight to the worst case scenario. And it just, the fear comes in, and then it's like all the things that could go wrong, and they go, nope, they shut it down before they even had a chance, before they even tried.
Yep.
So there's a lot of women and men that would be listening to this podcast right now that maybe have an idea in their mind. Maybe they, you know, they want to start that business, or they want to take some kind of a leap of faith and start something. How do you go about thinking about risk and thinking about like ideas that come to you? What do you have a process of like weighing things up? Because, you know, it's really interesting where you are in your life right now. Like you could retire, you could go and sit on a beach somewhere, you could just go and like, you know, but you are now about to start another business. So how do you think about risk? How do you think about taking these leaps, you know, and just trusting yourself, I guess?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because definitely a risk appetite changes throughout your life journey. So obviously that story that I just shared, I was young, I literally had nothing to lose and everything to gain. And so definitely the risk there was, for me, my appetite was a lot higher. Now in my 40s, I've kind of worked very hard and built my life. I think about risk a bit differently, because I have to take into consideration other people in my life. I've got a wife and I've got a daughter, and it's not just Rania anymore. So for me today, when I think about business opportunities, I just weigh the pros and cons quite clearly. I like to dive into the numbers. I like to understand the opportunity. I like to not get taken by a lot of hype that could be happening around a particular idea. And then with that, then I always, always trust my gut instinct, because it has served me very, very, very well throughout my life. So I then rely on that. If something doesn't feel right, feels off, then usually I just don't go with it.
Yeah, perfect. And I think that intuition, like, that's something that we don't tap into enough. And it's almost like dismissed in the business world a little bit. You know, it's like very much like, okay, how much money is this going to make? And what's the profit going to be? And what's the, you know, it's very much more analytical. But actually, we are emotional beings.
Yeah.
And when you're starting a business, you know, you mentioned the word hustle, right? There's hours, there's like, you know, every day is different. And some days you're going to be working like 12, 14 hour days to get this idea off the ground. So you do need to have a level of passion in the business, I personally believe. But what's your view on that? Because a lot of people, you know, there's this lot of thing people say, oh, follow your dreams, go after your passions. But, you know, where do you sort of sit with that? Because I know that like some people come up with ideas that maybe they don't feel super excited by. Do you think it's important to feel really passionate about the business that you're about to start? Or do you think that you could start something that you're not that passionate about but still make it a success? Like, what's your sort of take on that?
Oh, my experience is you have to be very energized by the idea and very passionate about it because it's a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
And so if from the outset you're not excited about this business idea you're trying to grow and you're not energized just by thinking about it, you're not, you know, in the middle of the night just thinking of more ideas coming through to you and maybe quickly writing them down. And it's that whole feeling of just – I can't really describe it, that energy that something really good and nice is going to happen. I think if you're coming off a base of, I can do it, might make me a lot of money, seems like a good idea, I think that's really not a great starting point because as you get more into it and as you put more hours, maybe you won't even put the necessary hours if you're coming off that base, it's just going to drain you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think we can, we've had a few ideas in our time of people approach us about ideas, and Pam and I sort of looked at each other and gone, does this excite us? And we've gone,
no. So because we know what it takes to get a business off the ground, and you know, you're not just talking about a 37 and a half hour a week.
It consumes you completely
consumes you, and you need to be ready for that. I would love to move on to how you got into the online pharmacy idea. And so let's kick off with that journey. So you went from like bricks and mortar. When did that idea come to you? Talk us through that.
So it's a funny story. I was literally in my pharmacy for 2 years. So at that point, I was 24. And being a true Gemini, I was starting to get like, I like this dispensing business. I like this pharmacy world. I love the customer, the patient interactions. Actually, that's what I love about pharmacy. But, you know, I'm ready for more. And the internet was just starting to happen. So that's 2001.
Wow. That's wild how far it's come in such a short time.
My age is really showing now. So, and literally one day as I was dispensing, a leaflet dropped on my bench, my dispensary bench of, build the website for $500, one of those leaflets. And I thought, I've been thinking about doing that. And, maybe I need a web page for this pharmacy and see how it goes. So that's literally the start of me asking the question of what is this online world? And then from that point, quickly realized that it needs to move on to a full-blown e-commerce website and went down the path of building one of the very first online pharmacies in Australia. I think there was only Pharmacy Direct by then and Pharmacy Online. So Chemist Warehouse wasn't even around back then yet. And built your chemist shop and I was doing it out of my physical pharmacy, which was a medical center pharmacy. So it's a very small area. And from there, we were packing orders. And we got that first order. We start packing the order, maybe two orders a day. And then one night I was working in the pharmacy and I got a call from a current affairs. And they said, "We love what you're doing online. It's can we come and interview you?" I'm like, it's a really small pharmacy. There's no warehouse here. It's just me and my pharmacy assistant. That's fine. We love it. We still want to come. And next thing I know, they all arrived. There was like 15 people in the store and they were filming a segment on the business. And again, this is the whole thing around, what's the worst thing that could happen? Let's do it. And I remember the producer, as she left, she said, "Keep an eye on your analytics tonight when the show airs." And true to her word, when they aired, we started really growing fast.
Wow.
But, that definitely put us on the map. But then very soon after that, another risk-taking moment, I was at home and I was watching a Today Tonight show or something like that, and they featured a weight loss powder product. It's like it's called Isoway. It's like a powder you drink. And I thought, that's an interesting product. Is anyone selling it online? So I was literally watching the show and I had my laptop in front of me and I searched for it and no one was selling it online. All I could find was the manufacturer. It wasn't being sold online. Interesting. I'm just going to list it right now. So I listed it on our website, ran some Google ads for it, and it just exploded that night. So I didn't have the stock.
I
didn't have any kind of relationship with the manufacturer other than I knew they were literally next door to the pharmacy almost. And I just kept feeding the Google ads monster. And I think I spent about 10 grand on ads that night, and but literally hundreds of thousands of dollars overnight in a 12-hour period.
Wow.
So I woke up in a bit of a panic, and I raced to the manufacturer's office and managed to do a deal. Called all my friends and family with their cars, loaded product into their cars, took it back to the medical center into an empty room, and literally started packing hundreds of orders a day.
Amazing.
And then from that moment, we moved into larger premises, and that kind of just the next phase of growth. So, yeah. That, crazy risk.
Yeah, but that there's a pattern there. You kept on saying yes. You kept on, you know, like thinking about new ways. You were innovative. You saw the opportunity in Web 2. The internet was coming, and you just went for it. And I love your attitude of what's the worst that can happen? You know, I just feel like that's such a good question to ask. Like, you know, just go for it. Why not? I think like that's almost the attitude you've got to have sometimes in business of just like, let's just go. I just think that's such a powerful story. So you went from starting that business, growing it became a huge success, and then you sold it.
Yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about how that sort of came about.
Yeah, so I'd had the online for just under 8 or 7 years. And then I was approached by the Pharmacy for Less guys. They were looking to start up their own online business. They wanted to acquire us and get me and my team to build that business. Look, I was at a crossroad in that point of my life. 7 years was a long time for me in a single space, and I literally needed either more funding to, again, blow it up internationally or be acquired and then help someone else do that. And I felt ready to just let go of the baby. I think the excitement had worn off. And so the acquisition happened, and that was really exciting. They were great. They took the entire team across, and we built their online strategy from scratch, which also included launching them into China. And that was a really, really incredible journey. Lots of learning. Again, lots of risk taking, but very much worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. So, did you have a break after that? Was it always just like, right, what's next? Like, that's huge. Like, you sell your business. Did you feel a bit empty? Did you feel a bit, I don't know, how did you feel? Because it would have been like you've worked so hard to get to that point, and all of a sudden, what's next? Like, what was next after that?
Yeah, look, you're making me reflect now, because I've just realized that I never have one thing at a time. I usually always have a couple of things kind of happening. So with the sale to Pharmacy for Less and becoming their e-commerce director and head of IT, within that role, I was able to also build out their internal, what they refer to as marketing hub. So it was a cloud hub platform that ran all of their entire marketing activities, and there's quite a bit of digital work involved. So again, it gave me a lot of experience in that space, and I was doing consulting for other brands around digital transformation, around e-commerce, and so kind of dabbling in that. And part of that, then I came across Smart Asset, which is the asset management company that then I became CEO of and part owner in. And so that opportunity came up just as I was starting to get ready to leave Pharmacy for Less, about three or four years into the role. And so, no, I didn't take a break is the answer to that. No, I did not take a break. I just kind of moved to Victoria and then started the Smart Asset role.
Can I just step back a sec just to talk about the acquisition and you having that light bulb moment? If I want to scale this globally, I'm either going to need to be acquired or go down the route of funding. And I think a lot of women that are actually going to be engaging in this podcast are potentially at that point in their businesses where, you know, they're at that bit of a crossroads, they're involved in taking digital, and that takes money, right? It's not a cheap thing to do. But we know, you know, the stats around VC investment for female-led businesses are diabolical. And it also took a sharp decline throughout COVID, as if we weren't starting off from, you know, an already dire position. So could you sort of share a little bit about how did it just come into your hands and you thought, right, let's roll with this? Or did you proactively go out and and seek some funding or seek an acquisition partner for the business?
Yeah, I suppose for me, I was lucky that they came to me and they tried a couple of times. I wasn't ready the first time we had the conversations. So that was, I suppose, it's always a better position if they come to you, right? Mm-hmm. Because you've got the power to negotiate and it happens on your terms. Mm-hmm. Again, also knowing when it's time, it's really critical because as entrepreneurs, you could easily stifle the baby, the business, and really hang on to it too much and not let go. So knowing when you've done all you can and you've exceeded all your skills and now you need to either step away or help someone else help you is really critical as well in the journey. Having to go out and seek funding is cutthroat. So you need to definitely align yourself with other people that can help. And there's quite a bit in and I think you'll be interviewing one of them next week, but there's a lot of women in the space that are devoted to this mission now because of those stats. So they want to help other incredible women get the right funding and get the right deal, because not just the money, you know, what are you signing off to get this money?
Yeah.
That's critical, right?
Exactly.
So that's there's quite a bit of a movement that I'm really, really excited about, just to help female entrepreneurs do exactly that.
Yeah. I've got a question because I've been thinking about this a lot and reflecting on this a lot as well. It's like, why do you think it is more challenging for women to get funded and even start businesses? Because I was reading the stats the other day, only 3% of female-led businesses grow to seven figures. 3%, like in your opinion, right? Because obviously we're never going to know the true facts. But why do you think that is?
I think it's two things in my view. One, a lot of women purposely hold themselves back and not put themselves forward as frequently as the male counterpart. So I think you could easily get into this space of, I need to be just a little bit better. I need to do just this extra thing. Whereas I see male counterparts with just a piece of paper and a little PowerPoint and then just hustling and selling the world and then dealing with things later. So I think there is that. But also it's a boys club, you know, VCs, PE, like it's a real boys club at the moment. Well, historically and slowly changing. And so the combination of both, if to every woman you've got 10 men, you know, pitching, then straight away the ratio is skewed. So we need more women to pitch and then we need to change the culture within the VCs as well.
And so both of your mothers and, you know, I champion you both because I think it's one of the hardest things that, you know, you can do, raise a living being. Do you think it starts at childhood for females? Do you think that, you know, and I'd love to get actually both of your thoughts on this, like how can we change this? How can we bring up a generation of females that, you know, don't have this attitude of like, I've got to be perfect, or, you know, I'm a bit more insecure, or like, you know, why me? Like, how can we raise females with this same attitude to be like, if I want something, I'm going to go and get it. Right? How, where does that start? Where does that belief, where's that programming? Because it is a program. Where does it start and how can we change it?
Oh boy, it starts very early. Gosh, it starts very early. And it's only until I became a mum to a girl that I realized all of the subtle messaging around her with very well-meaning people. And it's just constant, right? And as a parent, you really have to be aware of those messaging. And I'll give you very, very simple examples. You know, I walk into a store to buy bed sheets for my daughter. And I ask the lady to help me, and the first question she says, is she a boy or a girl? Is your child a boy or a girl? And I thought, well, that's really unusual for bed sheets. Does it matter? Mm-hmm. And she said, well, here's the girl section and here's the boy section. And in the girl section, it's all the fluffy, you know, flowers and pink. And the boys section is all the really interesting stuff, you know, the bed sheet cover with all of the ocean creatures and their names embroidered under them, the dolphin, the whale, the fish, and really very educational on the boys' side. And on the girls' side, it's really very fluffy and pretty and cute. So needless to say, I got the blue stuff.
Yeah. Yes.
But that's
I got the pink.
Oh, no, I changed that scene.
I know.
Write them off. But, you know, and I suppose for me, a young gay person, I didn't know I was gay when I was little, when I was, you know, in my younger years, but I constantly wanted the tracksuits that my brothers were able to buy from that particular section. And I felt weird wanting that. And I think with that then also becomes this whole messaging of you're only supposed to do certain things and act in certain ways. And then, you know, you dress them up, people come over, and the first thing they say to your daughter is, oh, look how cute you are, look how beautiful you are. And it's always about her looks.
Yes.
And then it's just subtle, but it's constant.
Yeah.
And so as a parent, you have to always say, you know, I love how brave you are. I love how strong you are. I love that risk you've taken there and kind of balance the conversations, but it's everywhere.
And I let's take it on to school. And I think that's like a really powerful message as well. Teachers are phenomenal, but I think very much we do try to put kids into certain boxes. And interestingly, I read something just about the differences between young boys and girls in the classroom, and it's almost like boys are called naughty. They're naughty boys because they speak out, they speak up, they interrupt the teacher, and girls are constantly told, you're a good girl.
That's right. Messaging,
It's that messaging, whereas I actually think the art of learning to interrupt is actually a really powerful tool, because if you're sitting around a boardroom full of male VCs, you bet your bottom dollar you have got to butt in.
Absolutely.
You have no voice.
Oh, absolutely. You know?
But it's just so ingrained in our society. And I think that's one thing that, you know, I want to just say that my mum did very well. Like she never put herself down in front of me. She never looked in the mirror and looked at herself and gone, oh, I don't feel nice today. She was somebody that was, she always just, I don't know, had this air of confidence about her. And I watched her as a very young girl. When I watched how she behaved, I watched how she was around men. She would never like walk into a room and, you know, shy, or like she would just flick her hair and walk into that room like she owned it. And I watched her, and I think I've learnt a lot from her behaviour. So I think as mothers, it's also being so aware, because we're constantly put these messaging. It's like, oh, as a woman, like you can't age and you've got to look this certain way, and you've got to dress like this. And it's just messaging everywhere.
Yeah.
And I think it's just being consciously aware as women, and also, you know, looking at our younger generation. If we, like, change starts from such a young age, and I just would love to see this next generation coming up that have the confidence and have the appetite for risk that it's going to take to have a seat at the table and, you know, go after your dreams. I think it's a really important conversation, which is why I wanted to bring it up. So thank you both for just sharing that.
You're welcome.
Thank you for asking.
Just to nicely lead on to, I think a lot of women and younger girls are actually really scared of making mistakes and failing. It's embarrassing, you know, they don't feel good enough, you get that imposter syndrome. So could you sort of share with us maybe a few mistakes that you've made along the way in your career, or anything you would class as a failure, and just maybe talk us through that?
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, yeah, there's definitely been mistakes. My first biggest mistake was taking so long to come out as a gay woman. I came out in my mid to late 30s. I'm 45.
Wow.
End of May.
Right. I didn't know this.
There you go.
There we go. Right.
And I literally only came out so that I don't lose my current wife, Clarissa, because I knew that particular relationship and her, she was just not going to have it, me being in the closet and living a double life. But until that time, I was in the closet with all my family. I would, you know, go and have lunch with my parents and my brothers, pretending to be someone who I'm not, and then go back to my house and try and live a different life, and that's just exhausting.
Yeah,
mentally, that must have been.
Yeah, so turmoil. Absolutely. Yeah, so I think if I had any regrets, especially now that I've come into my, someone's asking me, you know, you're living your authentic life, and I'm like, do you know how long it takes to actually get to your authentic, you know, whatever you are, like authentic life? It takes a long time. But I wish I was more brave.
Yeah.
And I think if I was to reflect, I was definitely taking all the risk in my business world and being brave in that part of my life, in a way to make my parents really proud, because I was ashamed of who I was as a gay kid, as a gay woman. Yep. And so I was constantly, you know, doing all these incredible things, and they loved that. They loved that. They would talk about it to their friends. They would show off about it, and I loved all of that. And then I got to a point where I thought, well, I'm just going to have to let them down, and they need to just hear who I really am. And and that's been quite a very rough journey for me. So it hasn't been great. I've lost a few family members in the process, and hence why we moved here away from Sydney. But that to me is my only biggest regret, and probably the biggest mistake of my life is waiting so long.
Yeah, wow. And you just, was it your partner that was like, you've just got to do this? Like, did she sort of give you the push or the strength that you needed? Or like, was it just something that you just woke up one day and was like, you know, I love myself enough now to like, this is who I am, and I just want to just speak my truth? Like,
yeah.
Was it a bit of a journey, or was it just...
If you love someone, you can never push them out of the closet. It's because it's a very personal journey. So Clarissa never ever asked for it, or even, you know, put any pressure. But with me and Clarissa, it was just passionate, strong, eternal love. We knew straight away that we were meant to be together. And I just couldn't do it to her. Couldn't put her through that. And the other thing that happened as well with Clarissa is we were first woman she's ever been with is myself, and we just started seeing each other a month into the relationship, and she said, right, I'm going home to Melbourne, because she lived in Melbourne. She said, I'm going home to Melbourne, I need to talk to my parents and let them know about this. And I'm like,
oh, hang on a minute. Slow down.
I've been in the closet for like 20 years. What do you mean? You've just been in this for a month. And she just looked at me and she said, Rani, I can't lie to my parents.
Yeah.
And they'll be fine.
Yeah.
And that just was like, it's like she modeled to me what a healthy family relationship and unconditional love looks like.
Yeah.
And she, true to her word, she went home, she spoke to her family, they were amazing. And then she felt amazing herself, because she didn't have to lie to them anymore. And so that was a trigger in that, hang on, this is something's really not right in how I'm managing this, and I need to do better.
Well, absolutely, like, you know, fair play to you for doing it, and like, you know, there will be some women listening to that will be able to relate to that, I'm sure, and hopefully it gives them the strength to do what you did, and to just, you know, to own it, and just to be like, you know what, like, this is my life, and you know, I've just got to speak up and find my voice. And I love the way you said, you know, you're taking all your risks in business. So it was just like, that almost became your identity. And then it's like, you know, this other life that you were living. But now you've sort of blended it all. You're this successful businesswoman, entrepreneur, you know who you are, you know, you're in love, and you're living this amazing life now. And you seem extremely happy, which it just shows that, you know, when you put yourself out of your comfort zone and you do step up into your true self, amazing things happen.
Absolutely.
And we've just got to, as women and even as men, as everybody, as human beings, we've got to live lives for ourselves. We can't live lives for others, because, I mean, I read a book and it changed my life. It's called The Five Regrets of the Dying. And the biggest regret in that book was, I wish I lived a life that was true to me. So good on you, because there's nothing worse than getting to the end and looking back and going, wow, what was it all for? And did I live up to my true potential? And I think you are walking, talking example of somebody who is. So, you know, you're an absolute inspiration.
Thank you. So
let's talk now, I guess, where you are now in your life. Like, you know, Digital Smoothie is going to be this, I'm sure, phenomenal business, and, you know, it's going to be extremely aligned. So where's that at? Where do you want to take that? And, yeah, tell us a little bit about that next business venture.
Well, Digital Smoothie has been a little bit of a brainchild for a little while. I just have never given it the energy it deserves, because my second company was acquired, and part of that acquisition, I landed in a corporate role for the last couple of years. That sucked my soul. but we'll leave that alone. And so when that finished up, my knee-jerk reaction was I need to get back into another corporate role. Mm-hmm. But it just didn't feel right. So back to that gut instinct, yeah. It just didn't feel right. And then this digital smoothie was always there saying, hello, I'm here. And the more I thought about it and the more I spoke to people about it, the more energized and excited I felt. And then opportunities started pouring into it. And life does this to me, you know. It just constantly, if I put it out there, I feel like life delivers. Mm. And so opportunities started arriving. And digital smoothie is a boutique digital transformation agency. We work with select clients on digital transformation strategy right through to execution. And by select, we mean, you know, usually we prefer to work with companies that have a purpose, are trying to do good in the world, whether it's within their local communities or within their teams and culture or the planet. And I have an exceptional, incredible team of smoothies, each with their own flavor, if you go to their profiles and read.
I love it.
they're incredible women. They've got incredible experiences, and they all are passionate about doing projects that are exactly that, you know, to helping organizations deliver digital transformation. And for us, digital transformation is not about the technology. It's although, you know, 10-20% of it is about selecting the right technology and implementing it. A lot of it is about the people.
Yeah.
And so really delivering projects that focus on the people and their journey and empowering them so that we're using technology for good. That's what energizes me, and that's what I get excited about when I think about digital smoothie.
Awesome. And so that just sounds like exactly what the world needs right now, when we're just almost going through this transition between like going into Web 2 into Web 3. And I love to sort of like, you know, pick your brain about what you sort of see the future. Do you, you know, if you've got any Web 3 strategies for digital smoothie? And obviously I know we've spoken to you about the sisterhood and we're super passionate about that. And obviously we're going to be picking your brains about that. So
absolutely. I'd love to.
Yeah. Advisor. Would you like to be
But yeah, like, well, I guess where do you sort of see Web 3 fitting in? Do you think it's the future? Have you got any thoughts and views on what's to come?
Yeah. You know, having been lucky enough to be kind of at the start of the internet e-commerce, I'm seeing very similar traits happening with Web 3.0. One, there's a lot of hype. There's a lot of information. There's a lot of risk-taking. It's still very it's bubbling away. So it's definitely here to stay. My views are do a lot of research, do a lot of reading, definitely do some investments in that space. So, yeah, in digital smoothie, I've got one particular smoothie who's very passionate about all of that, Liza, and we want to incorporate Web 3.0 strategies as part of how we deliver projects, whether it's smart contracts, whether it's NFTs, whether it's crypto. So it's kind of we're still talking about all of these ideas. But my advice would be, because back then, you know, we had the big bust of the internet stocks because people were very excited about them. Anything that had internet, people threw their money in and really overvalued everything, and then we had the bust. Didn't go away, obviously. It stabilized and then here we are. So I think just be careful with a similar type of, you know, movements in the Web 3.0 space. And if you had money to invest, make sure it's money that you don't need, that you just want to play around with. And then, sit back and enjoy the ride, because it's going to be exciting. And how lucky are we to, you know, to be able to enjoy both? I mean, I got to see the e-commerce rise, and now I get to see this again.
What a phenomenal journey. Incredible. It's such a historical time.
Absolutely.
And to be able to experience both in a lifetime is huge. I think we were still just maybe just a little bit too young.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. We missed 2001 hours. Don't know what was going on.
Yeah.
Too busy making radio stations with my girlfriend. No, that's fantastic. Well, listen, thank you so much for sharing your really inspiring life story and journey. Mm-hmm. There's so much wonderful stuff in there. And also thank you so much for being vulnerable enough to share some personal stories in there as well. I think that it's just such a powerful message, Rania, and thank you so much for being on our podcast today.
Incredible. Thanks for having me, ladies, and go the sisterhood.
Yeah. That's it. This is what it's all about, sharing stories, inspiring, collaborating, and, you know, inspiring women to step up into their true potential, which I think you are, like I said, a walking, talking example of that. So thank you so much for everyone who has listened today, and we will see you on the next episode. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I really hope that you enjoyed it. And if you did, please give a little share on your social. And if you have time, please leave a review. And I hope to see you next time. Take care.